creativity, hustlers, fakers, and thieves. Creativity is not the province of just a chosen few. Those who fear they have nothing to say or that it's all been said before can also grab the fire. But our ideas about practice, quality, or failure shape our work. New artists, working artists, strugglers, those who have been at it all their lives grapple with these same concepts. This is the heart of our endeavor, finding the different and similar ways that artists work to be creative. On Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves. Ali, welcome.
Hi, Gary.
Good to see you. Today's chat is with Anne Washburn, dramatist, on genius. And it may seem an odd topic. The media is filled with this worship of genius. Here are the smart people. They're over there. And here are the rest of you over here. And here's how someone took $12 and turned it into a fortune with this incredibly simple idea. What about you? You know, I'm left wondering when I got dropped on my head as a kid. And then another podcast I heard, and so-and-so is my friend who's a philosopher and the senior guy at a company worth $22 billion. Yeah, a lot like my friends. So this love of genius or proclaiming genius bothers me. Read the New York Times. It's a celebration of the best, this, that, or the other thing, restaurant, author, musician. And I just want to say bunk to it. I used to be intimidated by it, but I'm at this point, just want to say, I'm no genius. So what? What are your thoughts about this topic, Ali? What do you think?
This is such a vexed issue. It seems like it's one of those incredibly limiting things to think about, you know, as a concept of what is a genius and how far away are you from being one? Did Mozart sit around and just kind of like look at himself, like, it's so great to be me, you know, or Da Vinci, or is it one of those things that we call people after they're dead and we can appreciate their creativity and their constructions and their giving birth to a new, previously unimagined concept, which is what I sort of think of as what genius is. Then there's the other shoe that drops, you know, the Jonathan Swift quote, when a true genius appears in the world, you may know him by the confederacy of dunces that are all in confederacy against him. So there's that as well, you know, like, well, maybe it's not so good to be a genius, you know, and it's like a lot of other geniuses seem to be pretty miserable, you know, and I think that the genius often has to be so focused on whatever it is that they're trying to be a genius at that they have to sacrifice.
Yeah, I think that genius and obsession have to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one. Well, let's hear what Anne and I got into on this topic of genius. Hi there. I want to welcome Anne Washburn. Hi, Anne.
Hey.
Hey. Here's a quick, very quick bio on Anne. She is an American dramatist, a playwright, which is not like a millwright or a shipwright, is it? And yet this kind of effort for the stage is just as considerable and considered. Plays have been performed in New York, Washington, D.C., London, all over the U.S. Many writing awards have been granted to her, but she was instrumental in my life as one of my writing teachers, whose generosity and sharp critiques gave me the courage to begin writing again in earnest and with a purpose. And so I am particularly grateful and honored to have her joining me today. Thank you.
That was gorgeous. Thank you.
Our topic is an odd one that I chose, not because I consider you a genius, although you may be. You know, my purpose in this podcast is always to tackle a subject with someone of not just repute, but who's really skilled at what they do. And you're one of those people. But to try and break down these conceptions we have about some of these big topics. Theater seems to be a mysterious kind of art. Didn't someone say nobody knows how to write a play? Was there someone who said that?
I don't know. It's true, though, but I hadn't heard that. That's great.
What do you start with when you write a play?
I start with different things in different plays. Sometimes I start with a structure or a notion. Sometimes I start with a fragment of language, which I think is intriguing. Sometimes kind of just an arbitrary challenge to myself that might be sort of conceptual or includes things. But I feel like all of that you're going to write the play you're going to write. And the rationale for how you start the play is it's scaffolding for whatever the actual impulse to write the thing actually is, which you don't know until you're done or maybe long after that. I think every playwright will have a different definition of how you write a play or why or how it comes about. Part of what keeps me working is curiosity. What's going to happen? If it's going to happen to these people or this situation, or how does the playwright get herself out of this question that animates me?
Well, this topic of genius is a little difficult to pin down. If we're talking about what are perceived historically as geniuses, as Mozart or Beethoven or someone, difficult or childish, or Glenn Gould, the pianist, agoraphobic, and I don't know who we would call misanthropic. Do you think about this concept? Are there geniuses, or am I making this up?
I think there are geniuses, right? I mean, we recognize that phenomena. To me, it's always seemed like there are the genius. You see that in the maths and sometimes the sciences, and then music is a form of math, or it seems like that kind of, you know, for something to manifest so enormously through someone who's very young, it just, that's what I think of when I think of genius. I think of really inexorable. They're in the grip of an internal structure, which is particular and unusual. Are you dealing with something which is so clearly fascinating that you then just focus on that thing? Or is part of genius that you are consigned to be a little bit channeled in such a way that you're not going to take in all of those other things? That's what I think about genius. Yes, I think genius as math and science and music.
Yeah, music does really seem to produce these young talents. And perhaps because it is more of a mathematical ability.
You know, are there craft geniuses? Is that a concept? Is that a thing?
I knew somebody who was a savant. He was a woodworking savant. And he started in high school. So he started relatively late, you know, in talking about geniuses. But he took to it immediately and was not a designer, but could figure out any woodworking problem and solve it and do the work quickly. He was amazing. A guy named Phil Lowe in outside of Boston.
Sounds like more than talent.
Yeah, I think there was more than talent. I think he was really gifted. But then, you know, there's that, I don't know how mathematicians think. I was talking with a friend about someone who was involved in the wine industry. She was a winemaker. But she was really gifted at it because she tasted in colors, which, you know, you think about it and you go, well, I wonder what that was like. But, you know, I've heard of things like that where the brain is just doing something completely different with the sensory input that it's receiving that I certainly don't. Did you feel any pressure with your writing career?
I, for the longest time, sort of wouldn't cop to the fact that that's what I was doing. When I did sort of decide I was writing plays, I decided I was writing the kind of plays that nobody was going to do. I mean, I talked myself out of a lot of the pressure points. I didn't want to have a play on Broadway. I was just sort of doing it. I don't know what I thought I was doing, honestly. I didn't believe it was something you could actually make a life from. I just sort of felt like I was indulging myself in continuing to do it for a little bit longer before I figured out what I was really going to do.
Have you worked with a so-called genius actor? Is there someone that got cast in a part that was supposed to change everything and everyone?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I've worked with really talented actors. And you can have a really talented actor who's great for one piece of work and not great for another piece of work. I don't know about genius, although I'm sure it's true. I do know that if it's just like, I mean, we were talking about kinds of wood you like to work with. You know, you'd love to work with mahogany because it can do this, and the other thing. When you're working with great, and really I think of it in terms of working with a number of great actors, one thing that actors really love is because they have no control, you know, generally over who else is cast. So their whole experience is, as artists, is very much going to be dictated to by the creative team who cast it. But something that's really pleasurable is having, you know, the first read or people get together. And when you see actors discover they're in a room with other really good actors and their pleasure, because they know they're going to be able to really sort of play hard and work hard and go much further with each other. that degree of professional appreciation of each other. When a group of actors are really appreciating another actor, really cooking, really singing, that kind of hum in the room when everyone feels like really great acting is going on, that's really special.
And your role in that is, do you feel, I don't know how to put this, do you have a muse? Do words flow through you or do they come from you?
I don't know. I feel like they flow through me, and whether that's accurate or whether that's a different way of understanding that they're coming from me, I don't know, right? Like for me, that's a cosmological question I'm not equipped to
come
down on. No. But I think it is true. I will sometimes find evidence in my plays of the fact that things that seem mysterious will have in fact come from me from sometime in my past, from that some part of my brain was paying very close attention to something that I didn't realize it even could pay attention to. So I've found evidence of like great subconscious processing. But then sometimes there are things that get a little spooky and you're like, good Lord, where did that come from? And or you find a sort of echo in the outside world that seems strange. So I don't know. I don't know where it's actually coming from, but I know that it feels like it's coming from outside, and that's always pleasurable and to be attended to and encouraged.
Right. I interviewed Sean Hogan, a garden designer, and his best time for being creative is 2 or 3 in the morning when he's half awake and things come to him and he tries to write them down. Recently, 2 songs came to me in my dreams.
Oh, wow.
Which is really fun. They're crappy songs. Let's not get excited about it, but it was so much fun to wake up and go, oh, I have to write this down. I have to sing this melody in my crappy voice. And it was fun. That just leads me to talk about cosmological questions that can't be answered. Where does creativity come from? Are we born with it? Does everyone have it? Or is it just, are you just one of the lucky ones?
Everyone is intensely creative. I thought we had all agreed that everyone is intensely creative as produced. And then to a degree it gets, you know, everyone is intensely creative. And I think it's either if it's encouraged or discouraged and yet inevitable. I didn't think children were more creative than anyone else. Now I realize that's completely untrue. They're actually intensely creative. And I think for some people, they're just inexorably creative. They can do no other thing than adopt that as their identity and move forward. And then I think most people, it's sort of a little bit happen chance. Do they stumble into a way where they're able to make use of the parts of their creativity they're most easily able to access so that they're stimulated to try to double down and dig more of it out?
I think there's a time in our growth spurts where you are either encouraged or ignored or discouraged. I like the phrase, the inexorable journey of finding your creativity. That was certainly the case for me. I knew something was different about how my brain worked, but I wasn't really sure. But there was very little encouragement in my world. So that's the reason this podcast exists, to let folks know about that permission that one can give oneself to go off and try stuff, not knowing where it's going to end up. How about fame? What do you think about fame? Is that a curse?
Everyone says fame's a curse. I'm willing to believe them.
But I'd like to give it a try, you know, to see how it works for me.
Clearly, it's a distraction. And, you know, we were talking about geniuses and why is it that mathematicians generally do their best work before they're, or their most important, or they can only do their important work before they're 25, however that horrifyingly works out. And it must have something to do with just sheer, you know, when you're younger, you have so much more energy, although you don't realize it at the time because you're tired all the time, but sheer just energy and focus, the amount of energy and focus you're able to give a thing. And fame is just clearly very distractive to that. If people expect you to do a certain kind of a thing, that makes it harder for you to listen to the weirdo subtle promptings. And I know that my best ideas are generally small, strange, easily ignored ones. But I don't know. I mean, going back a moment to that question of permission, I feel like my experience as a teacher, I've taught undergraduates and I've taught graduates in playwriting, and I've taught, you know, adults who come in off of the street, the 92nd Street Y. And I've sort of come to feel like just the act of permission is the largest thing you give to them, more than any set of expertise or rules or advice or anything. It's just to remind people that if they have the will to do a thing, in the case of what I'm teaching, if they'd like to write a play, I sort of have come to realize that anyone who comes to me feeling very shy about it and yet feeling like they would like to write a play, my experience has been that actually they can.
Permission is huge. I think that's such a huge part of it. For people who are struggling or just starting out and unsure of their talents and whether it's going to be good, I think that's one of the problems with the labels of genius that we place on certain people. Well, he's a genius. And I say, well, dang, I'm not. So what am I supposed to do? Death and Transfiguration. Who wrote this? Was this Wagner or was this, I forget who it was. Coming up with that title to compose a piece, a song, it just seems like I could never do that. And then I sit back and I say, well, my voice is just as valuable.
With confidence, it's so interesting, I think. You have to be confident enough to do the thing somehow. And then from that point forward, I sometimes think confidence can be counterproductive. Believing that it's good, I think, can get in your way. At any rate, I know that I have written at times when I have felt what I was writing was meaningless and very stupid. And for whatever reason, sometimes because I was, I don't know, acting under pressure or an assignment or something. Sometimes the writing I have produced while negotiating feelings of deep worthlessness and terror has been quite good. And sometimes I've written and felt like it was going great and it has been going great. Sometimes I write, I feel like it's going great. It's not. I guess I just feel like the part of you which is writing is a very different part of you than the part of you which is evaluating yourself. And the two are so in parallel that we forget that the critic has really no, be it a good critic or a bad critic, doesn't actually impact the work. So the one piece of good advice that I do give students, or when I need to myself, when you're writing, at least, never to think in terms of time that you spend. Think of it in terms of pages. Just produce pages. Just produce crappy pages. Just do the work.
Do you find that you rewrite right from the beginning, or do you take that version one and set it aside and do version two, start over?
Yeah, I do everything I can to not rewrite until I have a full draft, because I have had some number of experiences where something which made no sense early in the narrative and which the inner critic says, oh, get rid of that, turns out to be really important later on. Again, which is that to say that, yeah, the inner critic is not what's making the thing. It's just hovering on top of the thing. It's a mysterious thing, the inner critic. Why is it there? It is obstructive. It is obnoxious. And it is not necessarily accurate. And yet we entertain it and continue. You know, A, it's a little bit inevitable. It's just there. I don't know what mechanism or why.
Well, if you believe in the left brain, right brain, not quite split, but the difference between their functions, one allows us to make coffee and the other enjoys it. So one is very logical and very temporal. And I got to do this on time and I got to be here and then I got to do this. And then I put this into this and I build a table. While the other side, the right side of the brain is like, oh, who cares if we build a table? And I don't care what time it is. And I'm just coming up with ideas. And that's great. I think it's that mix that has to occur. And both sides of the brain, I think one side helps keep us alive, that logical side. And the other side is, hey, let's hit the slip and slide.
I think there may be something to some huge part of our brain really not wanting us to not go inward at all, because it isn't safe, for sure.
Some people have this sense that creativity moves through them. I hear Paul Simon talk about some songs that he created in just a few minutes of time. And the same with the Beatles, perhaps under duress, but all of a sudden these things emerge and just seem to come through this conduit called an artist. And then some artists are What's the right word for it? So Leonard Cohen's song Hallelujah was reworked dozens and dozens and dozens of times.
For me, the best work always is the work which came easily the first time. But because I can never capture the entire thing perfectly the first time, I feel like all of the rewriting is, all of the reworking is sort of fiddling around stuff which isn't quite right, which always feels like something that wasn't quite heard properly. Yeah, I guess I think of genius as being the thing that didn't do the work. It came as a weird gift from the universe. And it may be that we all are touched with that genius from time to time. I'm sure you've had processes that just went like gangbusters, and other times it was laborious. And I sort of feel like, you know, and they're all valid. The results are generally equally valid, but there's something about that taste of a different way that always feels to me like, oh, that feels related to what genius must be like, where it's just streaming along through you.
Yeah, I think there are situations where you can get into this state of flow, but that's not something you can conjure up, like grab my magic lantern and rub it three times and here's my genie or here's my muse.
If you're talking about people who are tentative about their relationship to their creativity, I think two of the things that can really prevent people from really getting in there and messing around. And one is the myth of genius, which is that if it isn't easy or inspired or whatever, that it's not right, which is not true.
No, not at all. It takes hard work, I think, to get to that point. And if it's not coming to you immediately, you say, oh, I'm not a genius, and then you give up. But if you do that work, if you do that hard work and pour the ideas in, then it's possible that that genius can speak through you. I remember when I first started to try to write a play. And I said, well, I can't write dialogue. And I thought to myself, I should listen to people talk. It's like, how dumb is that? But once I did, then I went, oh, I love writing dialogue. Because, you know, there's so much that happens between two people in conversation.
Yeah.
But it's just understanding, oh, I got to do a little bit of homework here.
And I think curiosity is the prime thing. I think people sometimes think, again, when it comes to writing, but they need to write something which feels significant, or they're not paying close enough attention to what they are themselves are genuinely curious about.
I have to write Death and Transfiguration next.
Right.
And you don't.
I think if you're interested in something, you can make something out of that. You just have to listen. You have to pay close attention and figure out what you're genuinely interested in, not what you're pretending to be interested in, not what you're acting like you're interested in, but the things that really truly do interest you, and following your curiosity on those. And then you've gotten somewhere.
I really do believe that design is a vocabulary. So you practice and you speak and you try some things. And then after a time you can say, oh, you know what? I can use this here and I can use this and I can't use that. You become fluent in a way that is you, but there is still a sense of surprise. It can be a sense of surprise at the end, and you go, this worked, or this didn't work like I thought it was going to work. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thanks.
This is lovely. Thank you very much.
Little Bunny Foo Foo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we have the title of our episode. Such an interesting chat with Anne Washburn. Her take, particularly on the inner critic, I found really interesting. Why is it so obnoxious? And is it worth listening to? Interesting to consider the difference between the writer and the critic, or the artist and the critic, the self-critic. Interesting to note how harsh they can be, and when you need to lighten up on yourself. Here's a quote on genius that I found, again, from Word of Day, the Anugarg site. Great site. The thought of the day was from Michelangelo, sculptor, painter, architect, poet. You know, he had a few skills, considered a genius in his lifetime. The first biography written about him was done while he was still alive. His fame as a genius was well known. He said, if people knew how hard I worked to get my mastery, it wouldn't seem so wonderful after all. It's effort. It's discipline. It's hard work. And that's the key, I think. Settling into that role of creator takes on some meaning when one understands the effort required, but it has great rewards. Ali, what are your thoughts on genius? All this stuff we've been talking about.
Having said all that about genius, I think that there's also maybe a corollary value that we can draw from the pursuit of trying to be inventive in a new way. And whether or not we achieve it might be a forgiveness and a compassion that could be even more difficult to achieve. And it's one of those things that where you're forever approaching a line, but never going to reach it, but it's the pursuit. And so you can behave like a genius, even if you're not a genius.
Well, I want to thank you, Ali, for talking with me. And I particularly want to thank Anne Washburn for taking the time and chatting with me about this interesting, unusual topic of genius. Please join us for our creative conversation on this topic. Ali and I will get into it a little bit deeper on April 21st, 1 p.m. on Zoom. Go to our website for more information, creativity-hft.com. The podcast is called Creativity, Hustlers, Fakers, and Thieves. Which one are you? Thanks very much for listening.